B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. Seven-five, the Fanatic.
Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly with Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Mike Missinelli Show. 97.5 Fanatic NBC Sports Philadelphia. It's a football Thursday, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. You know, it's really nice when a Philadelphia team is good. When you know they're good, and you know they're going to be a contender. We all felt that cushion as we come into the season. But when a team is good, it also takes away conversational angles. Now, hear me out here. What do we say about the Eagles? Well, Carson Wentz looks like he's back. Hopefully he stays healthy. DeSean Jackson has given this team a new dimension. The offensive line is great. They've got two tight ends and maybe two of the best in the league. Defensively, the secondary is a little weak, but we can overcome that because the team is so good. They're going to score 35 points a game anyway, so it doesn't matter even if we look at the defense and it's a little weak. No angle. So with that being said, I'd love to just sit here and talk about how good the Eagles are. Now, can we do that, Tyrone? Can we do 4 hours of how good the Eagles are today?
No, and we shouldn't.
Well, but they're good.
Yeah, but that's not the only thing going on.
The Eagles are good. Thank you for calling. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you, but
I always look for the beneath the surface stuff to talk about, to be interested to talk about. The Eagles are almost disarming me because they're good.
But that shouldn't disarm you.
But it does. I mean, it's natural. It's natural that there's a lack of conversational topics when the Eagles are good, because all you can say about them is that they're good.
Now, that secondary is a concern.
It's a concern. Is it a concern enough that you're going to say they're a bad team?
It's a concern enough if they lose on Sunday. And it's something to watch.
If they lose
Sunday, it'll be because of the secondary mainly. And that's a real concern, and I can talk about that.
Maybe. But we almost need that to generate angle conversation. You see what I'm saying here? Like that's an angle now, but it's not really put into play yet. Like, we fear that secondary is not good enough, but we don't really know that they're not good enough. I mean, they could be mediocre all year, and the Eagles are such an offensive juggernaut that it's not going to matter.
That's possible.
It is possible.
That's possible.
So, here's the deal. I'm not feeling very good about this game. Even though I could sit here and say, on paper, the Eagles should win the game, right? There's something that's pulling me back from this game. Now, a good team is going to lose games no matter what, whether they deserve to lose them or not. And that's why we look at the schedule. We pick a number. And I pick 12-4. So somewhere along the line, four of these games are going to be losses. I think this Sunday night might be one of them. Now, why? Well, let's look at it this way. Because I look at things that make sense. And what people are talking about is, there's no way the Atlanta Falcons, with this kind of offensive line, can beat the Eagles' pressure up front. And I go, was I absent last week? Did the Eagles get pressure up front? And not only that, but they lost a starting tackle. So that doesn't make sense to me, that the Eagles would have this overwhelming edge right now in the second game of the year, because there was no frame of reference for it, that this defensive line is going to dominate a weak Atlanta Falcons offensive line. You don't know that's going to happen, do you?
I think that happens. I think they're going to kick that offensive line's butt. Yep.
Here's what makes sense to me. The dynamic of the game. The dynamic of this game is that the Falcons aren't in the Eagles' class, but yet, when you come off a loss and you get your butt kicked in practice to make all these kind of adjustments, and you're playing in front of a home crowd, and it's a Sunday night game, you raise the level of your actual ability. And that's what I'm scared about in this game. Now, rather than X and O it, I know the Eagles have dynamic weapons. I know they've beaten the Falcons before. I know Matt Ryan can throw for 350 yards and still lose a game very easily because he's done it many times. I understand their offensive line is a little weak, and they lost their rookie that they drafted, Lindstrom, which makes them even weaker. But for some reason, I think this game is going to be in the 30s, a major shootout, and that the strength of that guy's leg who kicks for the Atlanta Falcons is going to be the difference. I need you to help me. Help me help me today, the fan base. Because I don't like feeling this way. I don't like going into a Sunday game thinking they're going to lose. And I'm not trying to be some clairvoyant here. It's just the way I feel right now based on the ebb. I always go by the ebb and flow of an NFL season. Falcons get their butt kicked last week. They're supposed to be a decent team. You know, they're kind of in the conversation, not maybe as an NFC champion, but like in a second tier kind of way. So they're not as bad as they showed the first week. And when a team has to correct all those things, they concentrate harder in practice to correct it. And they're buoyed by the fact that it's a big time game at home. So I don't know what to say. Can you help me, Tyrone?
Yeah, the Eagles are better.
I rarely ask you for help. I'm asking you for help today.
Yeah, the Eagles are better.
Mm-hmm.
Flat out better. They also didn't play well enough to where the coaches can't get on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had they covered against against Washington and handled their business, I would be a little bit more worried. But there's a lot of things they didn't do well, especially in that first half,
mm-hmm.
and the defense the entire game. Therefore, the Eagles coaches will be making the same kind of adjustments as the Falcons coaches because they didn't win comfortable enough. Now, they win two games in a row. Now the coaches, I think, will have a tougher time. I think the Eagles have a lot to work on, and that's why they're going to win the game, because they didn't win easy enough. They didn't execute at the level they're capable of executing.
All right, we're going to talk about this, because I need the people to help me today and get me a little more feeling better going into the weekend about the Eagles' chances. Now, we still have another day. Like, Football Friday's tomorrow. So this is the way I felt yesterday. I feel a little bit stronger today on it. I read this story about Joe Banner thing. He does this Q&A every week. And Joe Banner's making football assessments, like X and O football assessments. And the one thing he comes off with is that I think the Falcons are a pretty talented team, but they don't have a good offensive line, especially after losing their first-round pick. And so then the question goes on. He goes, the Falcons are going to play much better than they did last week, and they'll be at home. But in the end, I don't see any way the Falcons' offensive line will keep the Eagles' defensive line from having a huge impact on the game. And I go, well, the Eagles' defensive line didn't have a huge impact on the game against Washington, and they didn't have a good offensive line. So I don't know where the thoughts congeal.
Because you had a bunch of guys who hadn't played in the preseason at all. Mm-hmm. Barnett hadn't played in about 11 months.
Okay. Then
Cox coming off surgery.
They have a new guy that has to start at tackle. Barnett didn't look that great. Graham didn't look that great. Fletcher Cox is Fletcher Cox. But listen, I know they have ability, but I don't know how you can come from one week to the next and say, boy, their defensive line is going to dominate the Atlanta Falcons. Had the Eagles' defensive line played well last week, then I would say that's a pertinent statement.
Yeah, but what you're saying doesn't make any sense at all, Mike.
What do you mean?
You're saying that the Falcons played bad, and you're assuming that even though they played bad, because they're good players, they'll play good. But the Eagles' defensive line, even though they're good players, you're assuming they won't play good.
No,
I'm
not assuming anything. I'm looking at the analysis of it. The analysis of it, to me, is faulty. That the Eagles' defensive line is going to dominate the Falcons' offensive line. I don't get that analysis when last week we saw that the Eagles' defensive line didn't dominate.
But they scored 12 points, and now you have it as a shootout. Based on not anything you saw.
It's a shootout because it's coming off a loss and it's at home. That's the only reason I have it. Again, I don't look at the X and O's as much as I look at the dynamic of the game.
Okay.
All right. All right, let's get to the Phillies. I know you're all cheesed. And this is why I told you a couple weeks ago that I refused to go on the hook. And this is the reason why. You get on the hook, and then they win a couple games, and then you say you're close to getting back on the hook, and then they do what they did last night. And now you come in rip-roaring that the general manager and the whole front office has to be fired because of the Dallas Keuchel appearance last night. All right.
Yes.
Now, I may agree with you, but what I don't do is get involved in topics that I know are not going to happen. At the end of this year, there's not a chance in hell that Klentak and McPhail get fired. They may get a lecture from Middleton, and Kapler may be the guy who gets on the chopping block, depending on how they finish. But I still don't think he's going to go either, because they're still going to finish about 2.5 games out of that final wild card spot. And at 2.5, they can justify keeping everybody. Now, I hear what you're saying about Keuchel, and right now I don't trust this front office. In fact, I think that I could do a better job evaluating players than this front office has done, than Matt Klentak has done. Because I was the one who looked at these pitchers and said they can't pitch, all right, at the start of the year, where Klentak was saying, no, we think they're all three guys. I was the one who was saying sign Keuchel because he's better than anything you have out there. I wasn't the one who wasn't going to the workout. So I hear what you're saying about it, right? So, yes, my judgments on this team would have been better than Matt Klentak's if I was in that position. But I don't get involved in stuff that I know is not going to happen, because all you do with that is get yourself more frustrated. Klentak is going to be back. They're still going to continue this process. If they have another year like they did this year, next year, and he's made some value judgments that were terrible, then he's going to go. But it's not going to be this year.
And I'm fine with that. I am. I'm not a guy that just wants to be firing people. Uh-huh. But my issue with them is I think there's a bit of a lack of humility between McPhail and him. There's a lack of humility. You can't be wrong this often and not be humbled. And if I hear him humbled at the conclusion of the season and recognizing the mistakes that he made, mm-hmm. well, then fine. But if he's talking that same stuff about this is good and we're doing well and we're right on schedule, I can't have that. I cannot have that. You cannot not go to his workout because you so don't need the guy, and then have that guy be 5-0 with a .97 ERA down the stretch for your division rival. Yeah. That can't happen.
Well, you actually didn't have to go to his workout to sign him. You could have made a decision before you even went to a workout that you were going to sign him, because the fact of the matter is, without even watching him work out, he's better than what you have, okay? His track record shows that he's better than what you have. But I needed a guy who can actually make a value judgment on a player's ability. And the thing I worry about with Matt Klentak right now is that he can't do that. That he sees something that nobody else that with a trained baseball mind can possibly see. And he did that with the misjudgments with his starting pitching. And he's done that with backup players that they've run in and out, the Brad Millers and the Sean Rodriguez's of the world. He has made one judgment on a guy who he says can't play. And you know who that is. It's the third baseman. They've looked at the third baseman. They go, he can't play. That's the only time that I at least admire that. Okay? I admire it because he can't. All right, and they finally made the value judgment that the guy can't play at the level we need him to play in the big leagues. Now, why they wouldn't have made that judgment if they're watching the likes of Pivetta and Vince Velasquez and Jared Eichhoff and Zach Eflin, who, by the way, were throw-ins. Their organizations couldn't wait to throw those guys into a trade for nothing. So right away, you should have a red light should go off and go, these guys don't think very much of him. I'll give him a chance. We'll see if we can rebuild Tatum. But we can't be conned into thinking they can actually pitch. And that's the kind of value judgment that this front office apparently is incapable of making.
And I'm supposed to feel good?
Right away, if I'm the general manager and somebody wants to give me Nick Pivetta, I guess something's wrong. But I'll try it. And then I'll watch him. And if I watch him in 2-3 years and he doesn't have any kind of success, well, then I move on right away instead of trying to con the world that he actually can pitch. All right. 610-632-0975. That's how you get in on the Mike Missanelli Show on 97.5.
The Mike Missanelli Show. 97.5, The Fanatic.
Eric Caraba, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing good. Let's get right at to the business here. Eagles and Falcons.
Yeah.
Do you? I'm going to ask you to you this way. Do you like Matt Ryan better than you like Carson Wentz in this game?
No. I think it's reasonable over the course of 16 games to pick Matt Ryan. But today, this week, the way Ryan looked last week, I love Wentz. He looked great in week one. I think the Eagles are going to have no problem putting up points in this game.
There's a lot of people like Matt Ryan this week.
I think he'll put up points, too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I worry about the Eagles' pass rush. I worry about their secondary, their linebackers. I worry about the entire defense. I think the Falcons will be able to keep pace with the Eagles, but I still think the Eagles get the win. But this should be a very high-scoring game, and there's ways the fantasy managers can kind of, like, pick through the rubble here and find some nice players.
Okay. Is Julio Jones a number one for you this week?
Every week. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter who he's playing. He's my number three receiver for this week, only because DeAndre Hopkins is almost always my number one guy, and I'm not worried about Jacksonville. And there's a couple players I am a little bit worried about in this game. Maybe not so obvious. Devonta Freeman of the Falcons looked terrible last week. Major groin injury last year. Looked slow against the Vikings. Now the Vikings do that to a lot of players. But to me, Freeman is somebody to worry about. You don't necessarily have to play him. On the Eagles side, obviously, all the running backs are kind of molded into one here. But the Falcons, over the last three seasons, dead last every year in allowing receptions and receiving yards to running backs. I expect Miles Sanders to have receiving yards this week. Zach Ertz underneath. Falcons do a good job deep on receivers. So Wentz is going to throw a lot underneath. He'll get his yards. Very good completion percentage. But I don't expect DeSean Jackson to have 50-yard receptions either.
All right. There seems to be a couple of mismatches on the card here. And it's Brady against Miami. I mean, is that like a mercy kill here?
Well, obviously, we need to watch this game to see what happens with Antonio Brown. He will play. I think he will play well. But I want to see how the targets are, divided up between everybody. I want to see if Sony Michel has a decent game. He was awful last week. The risk here in fantasy is assuming that every Patriot is going to put up big numbers in a game they should win easily. At some point, they may even take out some of these guys. But still, Brady, top five quarterback. Antonio Brown, top 10. Stick with Sony Michel and James White. Worry a little bit about Josh Gordon. And I can't find a Dolphin I would play in this game or maybe any game until they show something offensively. Kenyon Drake, Kalen Ballage, Devontae Parker, do not deactivate them at all.
All right. What are the mismatches that you see? Who's a good play this week that might not be obvious?
Well, if you want to look at quarterback here, there's some names that are a little bit odd. I mean, Lamar Jackson played great last week. That was against Miami, but I think he's going to do pretty well against Arizona, too. Remember, this is a guy who can run the football. I expect he's going to have a little bit more balance in his game this week. The Giants are also pretty bad. Josh Allen is good for a rushing touchdown just about every week now. I like him as a top 10 quarterback this week. I doubt most people are ranking him ahead of the likes of Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, Drew Brees. Go for it there. And then obviously that Rams-Saints game is interesting. Drew Brees, terrible numbers on the road the past couple of years. If you've got Drew Brees in your team, you do not have to play him this week against an elite defense on the road in a late game. Don't fall for it. Roethlisberger and Brees, every time they're on the road, I have to play, but most times.
Very interesting, because one of our Twitter questions is Brees or Lamar Jackson. You're going Lamar Jackson here, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying every week Brees is going to struggle, but in the road games, I mean, Roethlisberger's got more questionable numbers in road games, and that offense was a mess last week. But Brees, yes, I worry in road games outside of his nice dome.
All right, here's a tweet, and this involves DeSean Jackson. Mandy says, DeSean Jackson or Juju Smith-Schuster with the home game against Seattle?
Yeah, no, it's Juju. I mean, Juju's a top 10 wide receiver. I'm a little bit concerned that they, without Antonio Brown, that offense is not nearly the same. But again, it was New England. Give them a pass here. With Jackson, I just don't see elite number of receptions, and it's going to be tough to get behind that Atlanta defense. So Jackson, to me, is not a top 20 wide receiver. In this offense, way too many weapons.
Okay, Mixon or Sony Michel? That's from Livio.
Make sure Mixon plays first. If Mixon plays, yes, he's the guy. Sony Michel does not catch passes. So in comparing him to running backs who do catch passes like Mixon, it's hard to go with Michel, but I think everybody in this New England game will eat.
All right, interesting question. Been mentioned a couple times now. Who should you start, a 10-team PPR, O.J. Howard or Mark Andrews?
Love them both. I mean, I still have Howard a little bit ahead. Don't worry about short weeks, the Thursday games this early in the season. It's as the season goes on, these players get beat up. That's when you see performance go down. But I expect Cam and everybody to do well in this Thursday night game.
Quarterback question from RJ. Aaron Rodgers home against the Vikings or Philip Rivers at the Lions?
Neither's in my top 15, I think. I have Rivers 16 and Rodgers 17. Look who they're playing against. I mean, Rivers on the road, different quarterback. Rodgers against the Vikings. Look what they did to Matt Ryan. Flip a coin here. I have Rivers 16, one spot ahead.
All right. Derek Carr, a better option than Kirk Cousins this week from CLH.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Chiefs are going to score plenty and they're going to give up plenty. It's the kind of game that goes like 40 to 20. So, yes, I do think Derek Carr does fine.
Okay. Miles Sanders against Atlanta or Tariq Cohen against Denver for the flex?
Still too risky for me to go with Miles. I mean, there's just too many running backs back there, and they can just throw to Sproles. Sproles had the most rushing attempts. To me, Tariq Cohen, a little bit safer at this point. But by the end of the year, it'll be Sanders.
All right, Ryan wants to know, Alshon Jeffrey or gamble on Hollywood Brown in a flex full-point PPR?
Now, Brown is like a little version here of Deshaun Jackson. He's not going to get a lot of catches, big plays only, and they're not playing Miami this week. Alshon, it's more reliable, and I think he can get into the end zone.
All right, David Brown from email says, should I start Antonio Brown and bench Godwin?
Yeah. I mean, I think Antonio Brown, I mean, he couldn't get a better matchup. He's certainly motivated. I mean, there's at least a threat of suspension at some point, so he's going to want to put up numbers. Antonio Brown's really, really gifted. I would play him over Godwin.
All right. Start Aaron Jones at Minnesota or Carlos Hyde versus Jacksonville?
No. I can't make any case on Carlos Hyde. He did look okay, a little bit spry there, but no, I am not. I'm not doing that. Aaron Jones to me is a good player, tough matchup, but they have to feed him a little bit more than they did in Week One.
All right, a little complicated question from Steven. Engram or Mark Andrews at tight end, or bench James Conner and play one of the two in a flex?
No, you have to play Conner. You have to assume Pittsburgh bounces back here, and I still have Engram over Andrews. I love Andrews. He gets down the field like Kittle does, but to me, Ingram's still a better play. But you got to play Conner. You got to stick with him.
All right. Winston or Cousins?
Winston. I do think both quarterbacks do fine today. I mean, Winston probably threw an interception while I was talking, but he is a guy who puts up numbers, and he should be able to throw in Carolina's defense. I don't like Cousins this week.
All right. Running back, I have a question. Running back. Todd Gurley. What do you think of playing him, since that situation's a little diluted, and Josh Jacobs for real?
Jacobs is definitely for real. I mean, Gruden's going to feed him the ball many times as he wants. He never threw to Jalen Richard. Josh Jacobs is legit. Could be a top 10 guy on volume alone. With Gurley, I don't understand. Why wouldn't you give him the ball near the goal line? They just don't want him to get hurt or beat up. But he did get plenty of yards in that fourth quarter. I think Gurley is a guy you still have to play. But if you can trade away Gurley for like Josh Jacobs and Alshon, do it right now before Gurley gets hurt, because his knee is already hurt.
Okay, flex option, Mohamed Sanu or Joe Mixon?
Now, if Mixon plays, he is a top 15 running back. We don't even rank Sanu as like a top 50 receiver. He's inconsistent, but reliable, not big numbers, even against the Eagles.
All right, that sounds good. Let's wrap it up on that note. I got to ask you for your, you have a call. Oh, Tyrone has a question. Duke Johnson, Shady McCoy, or Mark Ingram?
I mean, Ingram's a guy we rank in our top 20. I mean, assuming it's a PPR, I mean, Ingram catches passes, Duke Johnson catches passes. I'm not sure McCoy will, but he's not getting enough of the volume right now that these other guys are. Ingram's a really good play and another nice matchup for him.
All right. Are you liking the Eagles on Sunday night?
Yeah, and they're covering.
The Eagles even win and cover.
Yes.
No problem.
They're going to win by 6-point win this week. I love it.
6-point win. All right. Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
All right. You got it. Have a good one.
We do have a call. We'll get it later. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate it. Right. We had a call.
The Mike Missinelli Show. It's 97.5 The Fanatic.
3:45, Mike Missinelli Show. 97.5 The Fanatic. Thursday show. Eagles and Falcons on a Sunday night. That's nice. I like a Sunday night game every now and then. I'm more partial to a 1 o'clock game, but a Sunday night game is nice every now and then. Especially when you got something. It's maddening when you don't have anything to do. Like you mess up, you have to waste a whole Sunday waiting for the game.
And the only positive for me is I got the green zone now. I could go to brunch.
Are you going to brunch?
I'll go to brunch Sunday.
You do a little Sunday brunch?
Yeah, but
with the wife?
Yeah, we do. But I can't when I got to get ready for the Green Zone. There's no time. But since it's a night game.
The Green Zone is right. You're on radio.
Right. During
the game.
So now I can go to brunch this Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I like going to a brunch.
You're a brunch man?
I do. I like brunches.
Yeah, you like scooping from the buffet?
We don't do the buffet places.
Oh, you don't?
No, there's nothing biased.
Oh, that's right. Why would you? Because there are all kinds of meat in the buffet.
Yeah.
Right.
So I get that, but it's good. Places have stuff.
Oh, wait, what's your go-to breakfast? So I don't know. I can't imagine breakfast without a little meat protein. You know, I gotta have a sausage.
Nah,
Scrapple.
I don't do Scrapple.
I do.
Well, I do breakfast sausage. Waffle pancake man.
They do eggs Benedict with the smoked salmon. Some places go with crab.
Eggs Benedict. Mm. Excuse me. You go haughty toddy with the eggs Benedict, huh?
Oh yeah. That's what I do.
What's that brunch bill come out to? Are you going to Eggs Benedict?
A good Eggs Benedict is like 17, 18 bucks.
And you go on lox and, you know.
Yeah,
you
got to do all that. And then my wife gets a mimosa or two.
So you're out of there with an $85 bill for a brunch, possibly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Big shot.
Yeah.
Ralph in Jersey. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ralph.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
What's going on, Ralph?
Mike, last night I'm watching that Phillies game, and I'm noticing, like, all the empty seats there. And I'm saying to myself, you know what? That owner can't be too happy with all those empty
seats. No, that was a really odd crowd last night. Coming off a win playing the Braves. People were going, people don't believe. That's what tells you. They don't believe.
Mike, you know what? And I blame them two guys. I blame Klintak and McPhail for the season that this team has had, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe that Milton isn't, like, upset about this, you know?
Sure he's upset, but I don't think he's upset enough to fire two guys that he just gave an extension to, because that would make him look ridiculous. And he doesn't like to look ridiculous.
Mike, and the bottom line, he's a businessman. He spent $300 million for one player. And he's got an empty stadium when we should be down here, like, rocking, you know? They should be in the hunt, and they're not. And I'm looking at next year, Mike. Like, their farm system is a complete mess. We're going to have the same situation next year. I mean, you know, where are they going to get a pick?
Well, here's the thing. If you bring in a whole new front office staff, you got to take a step backwards before you make a step forward. So it's just as easy for him to say, all right, I'm going to give these guys at least one more year to see what happens.
Oh, man, you know what? I'm like, you know, they ruined my baseball season for me, them guys. They really have. I'm so disappointed, you know.
What in particular about this year bothered? Like, what misjudgments really bugged you?
Really got me?
Mm-hmm.
The pitching staff, like the guys that they went into the season with, you know. They knew that these guys weren't a proven quality players, you know. And they took a shot, and they failed at it, you know. And I'm looking at how are they going to improve the situation. Like, their farm system, you know, is a mess. Like, they have nobody down there.
Listen, I hear you. The pitching staff to me is like, see, here's the thing that I can't get past. Now, those guys, when they got these players, like, because they weren't major deals to get these players, to get Eflin. That one was Jimmy Rollins, right?
Yeah, one was Rollins, and the other one was the Utley deal, right?
Well, who'd they get for Utley?
Boone, you tell me.
Eflin came from the Dodgers. Pivetta came from the Nets and the Papelbon thing. They just gave him. So what I'm, like, are they thinking, okay, these teams that gave us these players, we're smarter than them. We see something more than these organizations did. But you got to understand that these pitchers were in those organizations for several years. And those organizations made a judgment, they're fringe guys. We can afford to let them go. So either you're thinking you agree with those guys and you're going to try to coach them to a higher level because you see something in them, or you think you're smarter than the organizations that gave up the guys in the first place. And for that, you have to use your eyeballs and go, okay, I see Pivetta, and he throws 95, so we'll take a chance on him. But then you watch him for 3 years, and you go, well, he doesn't have any command. He doesn't have the cat burglar guts to get people out. So, yeah. But you can't con yourself into thinking that that's going to come. And that's what they made the mistake of doing.
I remember a spring training, he reassured you when you asked him mm-hmm. that one of these guys,
yeah.
meaning Eflin, Pivetta, or Velasquez, mm-hmm. would have a breakout year. And yeah. they told everybody that it was going to be Pivetta.
Right, but again, like, you're ignoring the track record. Like, you've given them a chance already. It'd be one thing if they're, like, first-year guys and you're trying to see what they have. You already saw what they had. Let's go to Kevin in Delaware. Kevin, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Kevin.
Mike, hang on, Mike. I'm sorry. I just got to say this. The girl is in the seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
Accountability, my bleed. Mike, I got a baseball question for you.
So you're ripping Kobe.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Mike.
Yes.
I'm not too keen on baseball. I just got a question about Rhys Hoskins when he got thrown out.
Who?
On that last pitch. Hoskins.
Yeah.
Last week. When he got thrown out.
Yeah. He got thrown out where?
Yeah. On that last pitch. It was the last pitch.
He got called out?
He argued a call.
He got called out on strikes.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But the pitch was high, and yeah. the catcher brought it down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the pitch is low, the catcher bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
The umpire knows that. I'm just asking, Mike, is this part of baseball?
Yeah. I mean, these guys are imperfect. The guy strikes on last night, I thought was terrible. He was the Phillies were getting the advantage when Melanson came in. He's throwing balls right in the left corner of the quadrant, and they're calling him ball. It's subjective sometimes with these umpires. But it's going to happen. You're going to get a call, right, or you're not going to get a call.
That's what I was going to say next. You're going to win some, and you're going to lose some.
Right.
So Hoskins know that he's not going to get that call sometimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it doesn't. You get called out on a pitch you think is not a strike. I mean, it peed you as a hitter. It's not like he can let's just accept it.
Right.
I mean, what's he supposed to do?
Okay, Mike. I'm just thinking.
Yeah, it's like he knows. Sometimes he's going to get a call. Sometimes he's not going to get a call. But when he thinks that, like, these guys all think they know the strike zone very well, and for the most part they do. Bryce Harper really knows the strike zone. When he argues, he really is justified in arguing. Rhys does it a lot. See, Rhys is conditioned to take a lot of pitches, and a lot of other pitches are going to be called strikes. And I think that he makes himself his worst enemy because he always gives them the. You know, the look. And they don't like that. He's been giving the look for a long time. All right, 610-622-0975. Your lineup is out tonight, Tyrone. Game 4 of the 4-game series. Can they salvage a split?
No.
Behind Smiley. It's your boy, another one of your boys. He's pitched well lately, right? Last game, he pitched well. He's convinced you he's okay because one start.
No.
All right. Leading off. Yes. Say Cita. Real. Hitting two. Harp. Big fella. El Mambo. In the fifth spot. Jetpacks. Hayes. Oh, no. Copa F. Michael Franco back in the lineup in eighth, Tyrone.
They had to because Sean Rodriguez was so bad again that they don't want to play him. And they try, but Sean can't make contact.
They could have played Bamboo Brad at third and pitching Tehran tonight.
Man, have you seen his defense lately?
What? He's a left-hander.
Yeah,
this is an upset that Franco's in the lineup tonight, not Bamboo Brad.
He must have good numbers against Tehran.
All right, we'll get the numbers against Tehran from Franco. 610-622-0975. Back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.